Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I was there in primary when a vehicle was coming about 90 miles per hour, crashing with other vehicles coming through the checkpoint, and the vehicle struck the secondary booth where another agent was at. He was also injured, and then he rolled over to where I was, and that's when it hit me. It didn't hit me directly, but at that speed, I would think it was pretty fast. After that, the agents, of course, they call it on the radio that they need EMS, that they have agents injured, and they put tourniquets on me, on my arm and my leg. Of course, EMS is on its way. I feel very lucky, Steve, that day, at that time, AMO, I believe they were flying back from Phoenix from doing some type of training, and they heard that on the radio and they landed right there. The helicopters that they used are not made to transport passengers.
Hey, crew, welcome back to this week's episode for part two. Our guest is Carla Castellanos. If you joined me yesterday, you know who we're talking to. You see this beautiful young lady sitting here with me today. If you haven't listened to yesterday's episode yet, come back, do me a favor and listen to it, because it kind of sets the background of what we're going to cover today. And this is really the meat and bones of why I asked Carla to come on our show, because her story is one of perseverance, of motivation, of stick-to-itiveness, of taking an attitude that I will never give up. I mean, you heard her talking about it yesterday, going through the U.S. Border Patrol Academy. If you missed that episode, Carla is a four-year veteran of the U.S. Border Patrol, one of the toughest agencies that we have in federal law enforcement. Their academy, everybody talked to that's ever seen them says they absolutely have the toughest academy. I thought the DEA Academy was a little tough, but, you know, I was a lot younger than I could put up with that kind of crap. But where we are in Carla's story today is she has been assigned to the Yuma sector for the U.S. Border Patrol. She has an area of responsibility that she mans herself solo, but she now has a partner that's lovingly referred to as Chori Queso. That's her canine dog, whose real name is Caro, right? Did I get that right?
Yes.
So, and that's where we're going to pick up again today, but then we're going to get into a little bit more. So Carla, thank you for coming back. Thanks for putting up with my silliness here on the show. You and your canine now are on patrol as partners, but there's something about a checkpoint. Did you have to start working checkpoints, or do you guys just arbitrarily set up checkpoints? How does that work in the Border Patrol?
Yeah, there's always been checkpoints. The Yuma checkpoint is part of our assignments too. I used to work at the checkpoint in Yuma a lot when I didn't have my canine. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when you have a canine, you're more likely to work the checkpoint, because that's where a lot of vehicles pass through, and it gives you the opportunity for your canine to look for stuff.
Right. Now, is Caro he trained for drugs, for explosives, for weapons? What are his specialties?
Yes, he is trained to detect drugs and people, concealed people.
Okay. And what kinds of drugs? All drugs?
Meth, cocaine, I believe fentanyl. I'm sure my instructors are going to kill me, but...
Probably marijuana.
Marijuana, yes.
Yeah. And those seem to be the major drugs coming across, right?
Yes.
Out of Mexico. Yeah. Your checkpoints, are those stationary buildings, or do you also have mobile checkpoints?
Yeah, they're stationary checkpoints. They're already there. We have a little trailer, and then we just have the booths where people come through.
Okay. And before you had your canine, was that just when you had to go work a checkpoint? Is that just kind of like you're turning the barrel? You know, you got to go pay your dues and set the checkpoint for a while before you get back out to your sector?
It just depends, you know. That's one day you can be assigned to the checkpoint. It's where they need the people. Mm-hmm. One day you can be assigned to a checkpoint. One day you can be assigned to the desert. It just depends.
What was your preference?
I like the desert better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot more autonomy out there.
Mm-hmm.
A whole lot more danger.
More fun.
Oh, okay. Now you got to tell us, what's fun about being out in the desert in the middle of the night all by yourself?
Well, it's very fun when you're patrolling and you just find some sign and you think there's people here. So now you track them, you're tracking for an hour, and then you finally find the people. It's very rewarding because...
Wow, it's like a cat and mouse game, really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they could have died in there in the desert. So a lot of times I had people thank me that we found them because they ran out of water, they were very tired, or they were feeling sick.
Mm-hmm. When everybody thinks, all the do-gooders out there, I'll say this, think that all we're trying to do is capture people and throw them back out. It's a catch and release. Get them back over that fence. When in reality, you're out there saving lives.
Yes, yes. A lot of times we receive 911 calls from people lost in the desert. And the people that go there, they send Border Patrol.
Mm.
We go and find them.
That's heroic. That's exactly what that is. You're out saving people, regardless of what other people want to say. Mm-hmm. I remember when they came out to that, you may remember this, where they showed the Border Patrol officers on horseback and said that they were threatening and intimidating those people. And when the truth came out, it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. Yes. That's not what's going on out there. You guys, I'm one of your supporters and heroes. Of all you heroes out there, I think the job that you do, I could never do. People think I'm crazy for the things I did. I think you guys are crazy for what you do, just to be quite honest with you. But it also has a lot to do with the way you grew up and what your values and morals and norms are. Now, you get selected one day, and then we're talking about October 1st, 2023, to work a checkpoint. And is that at the Yuma checkpoint?
Yes, on Interstate 8.
Okay. And what hours are you working that day?
That day is from 2 p.m. to 12.
Okay. And your responsibilities, you got Caro with you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you actually stop cars and talk to people, or you wait for another Border Patrol site guy to come over and say, hey, check this car?
No. So how it works is I take Caro out from the vehicle. And then when vehicles come through, I just have Caro take a sniff near the vehicle. And if he catches some type of odor and he alerts me that there's something in there, then I just kind of make a sign to the primary agent and they send them to secondary when Caro gets to do it, our sniff.
Mm-hmm. So you're walking the line of the cars, right?
Yes, I walk around the vehicles, nothing. I don't stop anyone unless Caro tells me that he found something.
Just out of curiosity, as you're walking that line, because I'm going to guess there's hundreds of cars there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do people roll down their window and make comments to you?
Well, not comments, but they're not comments to me or bad comments or anything. They've just said like pretty dog and things like that.
Okay. I guess I'm thinking about the ugly Americans. Because I could just imagine things that would be said.
Yeah, I mean, as a female, you have an idea of like the things that have been told to me at the checkpoint. But other than that, I mean, just pulling out, saying Caro's pretty or things like that.
Yeah. Oh, good, good. Now, what's the closest town to you from this checkpoint? How far away are you from town?
From town, I believe maybe 5 miles away. There's nowhere you start seeing the stores like gas station, things like that.
Is that Yuma proper?
Yes, that's still Yuma, but maybe 5 miles from that checkpoint, there's the gas stations. And then furthermore is, you know, when you start seeing the houses and all that.
And I don't know if you know the answer to this, but how far away from the hospital were you? Was that checkpoint?
The checkpoint, I want to say, is probably 45 minutes away.
Whoa. It's a pretty long way.
I'm not, it's probably wrong, maybe because you can take from the checkpoint, of course, you can take the highway all the way to the exit of the hospital, but mm-hmm. still, so maybe 40 minutes, yeah.
Okay. And so just tell us what happened that night. What time of night did this accident happen?
So I go in to work at 2 p.m. Every day we have muster at 2 p.m. and then you go to your assigned zone. And that day I was not assigned to the checkpoint, but since at that time I had Carl for about a month and a half or something like that, mm-hmm. I wanted him to work. I wanted him, instead of being in the vehicle all day in the desert, I wanted him to work. So I switched with another agent and I told her if she wanted to switch, I could go to the checkpoint so Carl could work and she could go to my son. And yeah, we traded places. I go grab my food, some energy drinks, and I go straight to the checkpoint probably around 4. I don't remember anything from the day or days prior. I honestly lost memory from I don't know how many days before the accident, but I get to the checkpoint and around 4 p.m. is when the accident happened. So I was working at the checkpoint. I was working Carl, and then I put him up in my vehicle because after 30 minutes, they get tired. Mm-hmm. So I put him up in the vehicle so he could rest. And I remember we were short-staffed that day. So for our rotations, as a canine handler, you don't have a rotation. You just bring out the dog when he's ready. But as a regular agent, you take turns to be on primary and secondary, and you get a break in between. And I remember, I think I said, I put Carol up. I'm going to jump in the lane so you guys can have more time, you know, during breaks. And that's it. I don't remember, but this is what I was told. This is what happened. I was there in primary, I believe, and when a vehicle was coming about 90 miles per hour, crashing with other vehicles coming through the checkpoint, and the vehicle struck the secondary booth where another agent was at, he was also injured, and then he rolled over to where I was, and that's when it hit me. It didn't hit me directly, but at that speed, I would think it was pretty fast. Mm-hmm. And after that, the agents, of course, they call it on the radio that they need EMS, that they have agents injured, and they put tourniquets on me, on my arm and my leg. I believe they put tourniquets. Of course, EMS is on its way. I feel very lucky, Steve. That day, at that time, AMO, they were flying back from Phoenix from doing some type of training or exercises over there, and they were flying back from Phoenix. They have to fly over Yuma, and they heard that on the radio, and they landed right there where they had to. The helicopters that they used are not made to transport passengers, just for
observation and surveillance.
Yes, for observation. Yeah, they're not made for that. So what they did is they broke the door of the helicopter so they could put me and my partner in the helicopter and they could fly us to the hospital. And that's what they did. I feel very blessed that they were right there in the right moment at the right mm-hmm. time. And I'm always very thankful to them. I've seen them up. They went to see me to the hospital, and then I saw them again after, and I'm always thankful for them. You know, if it wouldn't have been for them, I wouldn't be here today, I think. They fly me to the Yuma Hospital, where they stabilized me. They just made me good enough to make it to Phoenix. Because later on, probably about 2 months ago, I received a message from one of my doctors that treated me in the Yuma Hospital. And he invited me to go to his office and so that he wanted to see me and talk to me, see how I was doing. Mm-hmm. And he told me that that was the best decision they could have made because I wouldn't have made it all the way to Phoenix in that condition. He said, I think you rarely made it to Yuma because I was bleeding out. I was in such bad shape. They had to give me blood transfusions in there. And then I had to receive more blood when I was in during the ride from Yuma to Phoenix in the helicopter. Mm-hmm. I went into shock. And yeah, after Yuma, they flew me to Phoenix again in a helicopter. And in Phoenix is when everything happened. At that time, my family, my mother and my two siblings were already at the Phoenix Hospital. My mom was in Calexico. She had to be picked up and taken to Phoenix. To Phoenix is about 4 hours 4-hour drive.
Wow.
Funny story, funny thing. My sister, she had no idea how to tell my mom that I was in it, that I had been in an accident. So my sister, what told my mom was, "Mom, Carla got bit by her dog again and she's in the hospital."
Okay, whatever works.
Yeah, you have to come here because the dog beat her bad.
Yeah.
And of course, my mom believed that because I would always tell them, like, "This dog beat me again." Like, "Mom, look, he beat me."
Yeah.
And yeah, my mom, so she would be, she wouldn't be that worried during those 4 hours, 4-hour drive.
Who drove your mom from Calexico to Phoenix?
An agent. They sent an agent to pick her up and take her to the Phoenix hospital.
Excellent.
Yes. But by that time, my brother and my sister were already in Phoenix. And they
said... I don't want to go too far into this. I want to get back up and go through some of the... And I know you don't remember a lot. I remember when I was in junior high school, I got hit by a car riding my bike. And I remember getting out of school that day. And I remember my buddy and I going to the swim... We were riding our bikes to the swimming pool. And I lost about 4 days. I just remember waking up in a hospital. So I understand about the short-term memory loss here. So, and why I'm saying that is for our listeners is a lot of what Carla's going to tell us now is what other people have told her. And when we're lacking in details, that's why. Because I know you got I had a million questions for Carla when we were on the phone call. And finally I had to rein back and like, "You idiot, she told me how many times that she doesn't remember." But I think it's the curious side of us as individuals, but also that investigative side, I think also kicks in because I want justice for Carla is what I want here. But, and I'm not going to go any farther there. I'm going to let her tell you the story, but you're in this building and it hits the one checkpoint takes out an agent. Were his injuries as severe as yours?
Yes. I'm not exactly sure what his injuries were, but he was also in very bad shape too.
And he survived?
Yes, he did. He's actually back on full duty now.
Okay. And I saw one of the photographs I saw of you was you and another, a male agent. And I'm going to guess now that that was the other guy that was injured.
Yes, yes.
Okay. But then you said that after it hit his checkpoint, then the car rolled over. Is that right? And hit your checkpoint?
Yeah, that's what they said.
Okay. And so you saw nothing coming. I mean, you just got blindsided, right?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like, "Oh my God, this guy's not going to stop. I got to get out of here."
Mm-hmm.
It's just all of a sudden your life has been changed forever. You mentioned AMO. Can you tell our listeners what that is?
Yes, they're the Air and Marine Operations Branch, and they were just flying over when they decided, they heard on the radio what had happened, and they decided to land right there.
I have been to the, I don't know if it's Border Patrol or CBP or HSI, what branch in Riverside where Air Marine Operations have a physical facility. This was years ago. It might not even be there anymore. But the things that the Air Marine Operations were doing, that's a very specialized unit within your organization, isn't it? I mean, these are some studs and studettes out there doing God's work through not only helicopters and fixed aircraft and predator drones and marine boats and all the different things they do. I guess where I'm going with this is the fact that there's an AMO helicopter flying over Yuma at the exact time that a call goes out is nothing more than a God thing as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
That I can't imagine that happens very often. Because their responsibilities are much different than just, "Well, let's fly over a checkpoint, see what's going on." It's the same thing goes on every day. A bunch of cars trying to come into the United States, right?
Yes, yes. When I was told that, that's what happened. And when I met them, I felt very lucky.
You were very blessed.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as luck. There's no such thing as coincidence. You're just, you know, it's just the good Lord saying, "Carla, I'm going to put you through something, but it's not your day to die."
Yes, I feel that way. I feel like that's exactly what he did.
And then, and ladies and gentlemen, I'm not trying to trivialize anything. This story is just so motivational for me. Makes me proud of our men and women that are out there doing what they do today, which is why we have Game of Crimes to start with. But this helicopter lands. Now, these helicopters aren't cheap, are they? I mean, we're probably talking several million dollars. And these two pilots, they're thinking, they see the need to save a brother and sister agent here. And they break the doors on the helicopter. Now, I'm sure there was a lot of splaining had to go on after all this is over, right?
Yes.
But I don't know if you know the answer to this or not, but I certainly hope that there were no repercussions whatsoever because they saved the lives of two of their own.
I hope not. I haven't told anything, but I hope not.
Yeah. And you mean you have not been told anything, right?
No, I haven't been told nothing.
You know what? That's called leadership, making a command decision in a crisis situation and save two lives. Leadership. Boy, there's something. How about that? Now, you mentioned to me that one of the agents, and I didn't know if this was an agent that you were working with or one of the pilots, had been a former military medic.
Yes.
Was that one of the pilots?
No, he was another canine handler. He was prior military. I believe the job he would do in the military, he was very well trained for providing this type of medical stuff for injured people.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, you know, in his time, he went, you know, probably to wars and saw a lot of things where he had to see this kind of stuff and he had to save some lives. And yeah, he knew what to do.
Which involved what?
Putting tourniquets, stopping bleeding. He knew what to do. I am very blessed too, because the other agents that were there, they had no idea what to do. They were just freaking out. Like when you cut off a head of a chicken and they keep running.
Yeah.
That's how they were. But this person, he remained calm and knew what he needed to do. And later on, he told me that he had to lie to me. Because he said that I was talking to him. I was planning a camping trip. And he said I was asking him, like, am I still going to go camping? Am I still going to go to this place? But, you know, months later, after I was good and well, he told me that he had to lie to me because I was actually asking him if I was going to die, if I was going to make it. And that he couldn't tell me that. So that he had to lie to me. I'm glad that he didn't tell me.
So, and I know you don't remember this, but just by that statement, it's obvious you knew you'd been severely wounded.
Yes.
Do you remember seeing any of your injuries at that time?
No, I don't remember seeing anything. I don't remember anything. I really don't, but they just cut off my uniform. I was just in my sports bra and my shorts, and it was all full of blood.
So, and I certainly don't mean to bring up bad memories for you. People remember things, or people handle situations differently. And if I get too prying here, you just tell me, shut up, Murph, and I will. In Phoenix, you told me that, what was your prognosis as you learned later from the doctors?
So they didn't know where the bleeding was coming from. They kept giving me blood, but I kept losing it. My body was not retaining anything because they just couldn't find the source of the bleeding. There was multiple sources, but they couldn't stop. He said they would stop one and then I would start bleeding from somewhere else. Wow. Or that they would stop like two places and somehow I was bleeding from losing blood from somewhere else. Yeah, everything I said is the stories that I've heard from my two siblings and my mother and, of course, people that was in the accident. So by that time, my mom... Do I keep with the story?
Sure. Yeah, it's your story. However you want to tell it.
My mom arrives to the hospital and, of course, the doctors told my sister and my brother that I'm really bad. I believe the human body, I'm not sure, can only hold... I believe the human body has like 3 or 4 liters of blood, something like that. I had already lost 10.
Wow.
They just couldn't do anything. By the time my mother gets there, she said it's like in the movies, the elevator door opens and there's 50 or more agents in the waiting area. The door opens and everyone just turns to her to look at her. And then everyone looks down. And that's when she's like, I know it's bad.
Yeah.
You know, because they couldn't
dog bite.
Yeah, they couldn't look at me in the eyes or nothing. And she said that as soon as the door opens, my sister runs to her and hugs her. And they told her she had an accident at work and she's here. And that at that time, the doctor came out from the operating room and he told my family, she's not going to make it through the night. We can stop the bleeding. You guys can go ahead and into the room and say your goodbyes because we can't do anything for her.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And yeah, I can't, when my sister tells me these things, I just can't believe that was told. Right. I can't believe that they had to hear that.
Right.
And
that's just completely devastating to a family. Wow.
Yes. Yes. My mom said they went into the room. And of course, my sister and my brother, they said they couldn't recognize me. They said I had all these machines attached to me. They said there was like a plastic bag around me because they had me open from my chest here down. They just had me open.
Oh my God.
The doctor said they couldn't close me because I was in such bad shape that it would take time to close me and open me again. So they just left me open and put some ice packs inside me. My sister, my brother said they saw everything, meaning my organs and all my insides, like completely open. They could see everything. They said my face was so swollen. It looked like a football. They said I had like an astronaut thing around my head. They said it was horrible to watch and it didn't even look like me.
Mm-hmm.
They just couldn't.
I couldn't imagine. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine. You know, we talk here on Game of Crimes mostly about our husbands or wives and our children. I refer to them as the unsung heroes because they never know if you're going to come home or not. But I've never given a whole lot of consideration to our parents and our brothers and sisters, especially in a case like this, seeing such a horrific sight of someone that you love so much. And I'm certainly not faulting the doctors because at the time they thought Carla's not going to be here tomorrow. And you do want your family to have that last contact if they can. That, I don't know if I believe in this closure thing that everybody talks about, but so I'm not going to poo-poo it one way or the other. I don't know if it's real or not, but man, for your mom to come in and see you like that, that's the last thing you ever want to see of a child.
Yes.
Oh, Lord, she must be a strong, strong lady.
I know. Yeah, I put them through a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't intentional.
No, not at all.
I was like, I will get you back, Mom. Look what I'm going to do.
Yes, no.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Border Patrol, I looked up just a couple of statistics about Border Patrol. We're talking about an agency that's authorized by Congress to have 22,000 agents. That's not personnel. That's just gun-toting agents. That's massive. Especially when you look at like DEA, we're authorized 4,600 agents to work worldwide. But you say there's a ton of uniforms in the waiting room. And that's, anybody that's ever done this job, you know what it is. It's the brotherhood of law enforcement, the sisterhood of law enforcement, the law enforcement family coming together. That's why when I gave you a thumbs up when I asked, how did your mom get to Phoenix from Calexico? The fact that the agency sent an agent to transport her, that's the way it should be. Because that's, yeah. Even though your mom's not, she's not carrying a badge and a gun, she's still family.
Mm-hmm.
So guess I'm very proud to hear that that Border Patrol stepped up and did the right thing, because you know what? Not all agencies would do that. Mm. There was a time when even my agency, I'm not sure, would have done it, but they do now.
Well, when they took me to Yuma, everyone in Yuma and other agencies were there. My sister said that there was probably around 200 officers and agents, Yuma PD, the sheriff's office. We have multiple cities, like Stone Garden and things like that. They were all there just for that. And of course, Phoenix is further. So of course, there was less agents there, but that's still around 50, probably more were there.
Right.
Phoenix.
That's law enforcement culture. Love it. Yeah. I love it. So that night you're on your deathbed basically, but then what happens? Cause we're talking to you today.
Yeah. So, and then after that, my mom said that they took me back into the operating room and they just kept on trying. They said surgery is about 10 hours long, 12 hours, 14 hours long, surgery after surgery. And then all of a sudden, they didn't give up. They kept pulling me into the operating room to do another surgery and then to do another surgery. And they said it was not like 2-3 hour surgery. There were like the whole day surgeries.
Yeah.
So that night, they took me back in and they kept on working on me until the next day. And then they put me back into the room. And she said that's what they just kept going. They kept doing for a few days until I was not completely stable, but I was a little better, where there was a chance I was not dying anymore.
Well, they must have found where the blood was coming from, right? Where the leak was.
Yes, probably. And then after those days, my mom said that the doctor came in, the primary doctor, the surgeon, he came and he told her, I don't know how she's still alive, but she is. He said, I don't know. I can't explain it, but she's still alive.
Wow. Yeah. That's called a miracle.
Yes. Yes. I feel very lucky. You have no idea how that feels, you know, knowing that you were very close to die, to the point where your family had to hear those words to this point right now. I can't believe it. I don't know how. The doctors are angels.
Yep. You know how.
Yes.
Good man upstairs. How old were you when this all happened?
I was 27.
Wow. And again, ladies and gentlemen, this was October 21st, 2023. We're recording this on April 8th of 2025. So we're a year and a half down the road here. How long were you in the hospital? And then where did you go from the hospital? Because I know there's more steps.
After I was better, I was in a coma, in an induced coma for 2 months.
Oh, wow. Okay. I mean, I know you don't know it, but wow. I mean, that just sounds like so severe.
Yes. I had no idea it had passed that much time.
Yeah.
It was like in the movies, because the nurse comes and she asks you, do you know who you are? Do you know where you're at? Do you know what time is, what day it is? And at that time, I couldn't walk. I couldn't talk. I had these tubes in my throat. I couldn't talk. But when I woke up, sometime in December. It had already been 2 months since the accident. Of course, I was better, but they woke me up from this induced coma. And as soon as I woke up, they asked me these questions. I was so weak. I just said no to everything. I couldn't talk. I didn't know why I couldn't talk. I couldn't lift my arm. I was so weak. I couldn't lift my arm to write or anything. And then I realized I don't have an arm, so of course I can't write. And that's how it was when I woke up. Little by little, I remember, I don't know why, in my head, I was like, I had an accident coming from El Paso, from the K-9 Academy to Yuma. I had a car accident, and that's what happened in my head. But no, I was completely off. That was not what happened. The drugs started wearing off. I just couldn't talk. I had this tube in my throat. I had so many questions. I wanted to ask a lot of things. I needed to know what had happened to me. And my family, they just told me you were in an accident and things like that. And then after that, just little by little, I started getting better. I started showing, they started pulling machines from out of me. I didn't have to be connected to many machines anymore. I still needed a ventilator. I couldn't breathe on my own still. But then the day finally came, probably about 2 weeks later, they took out the ventilator and they put a little thing that you put here and you can talk. And that was probably the best day of my life. Wow. I couldn't eat or anything. I was still being fed through a tube. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I had was I broke both my legs. My arm was shattered. I believe it's called a complex.
Compound fracture.
I broke my ribs. I fractured my spine. I lost a kidney, half of my liver, part of my small intestine. And I just found out the other day that I don't have a gallbladder. So that was removed too. Yeah, it was very bad.
Wow. How long were you in the hospital before you say you had to go to rehab?
I was in the hospital. So the accident happened October 21st. I left the hospital in Phoenix in January 20-something. So probably,
3 months.
Yeah.
And then did you go home or did you go straight to rehab?
No, I went straight to a rehab center in San Diego.
Okay.
Yes.
And how long were you there?
5 months. Wow. Yes, I was there for 5 months. When I went there, it's because I couldn't walk. I was in a wheelchair. I couldn't do anything. I had just lost my arm. I remember waking up, and then when I was better, the drugs were off. And I just remember looking down and I just smiled because I was like, it was bad. You know, this is not me because I don't have an arm. I just looked down and I was like, what? I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that that could happen to me.
Mm-hmm. And not have any memory of it at all.
No, and not remember anything. What happened to my arm was that it was so broken that I'm jumping here and there from this story. I had to go back. My arm was so broken and the doctors told my sister that they prefer to go to put it life over limb. They didn't have time to treat my legs or my arm if I was bleeding from the inside. Right. What was the point of saving me and having an arm, but I was going to die.
Right.
So by the time I was stable enough, probably a week later, that's when now we can see what happened to the legs, what happened to the arm. It was already too late for my arm. It was already dead. I believe it was already black, was dead. Mm-hmm. And the doctor, my sister had to sign off a form saying that my arm had to be amputated. I remember she telling me, sometimes she feels, not sometimes, but she feels bad about it because she had to sign.
Right.
She had to sign something saying, yes, cut off her arm. But they said that luckily it didn't spread all the way up. So I only lost part of it. As you can see, I still have my elbow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then for my legs, my left leg, it was bad. I was missing part of my bone. I lost this much from my bone in where my chin is at. I don't know the name of that bone, but from my chin and skin, it was also very broken. And I remember my mom telling me that the doctor said that they had to amputate my leg too, because I was missing bone. I mean, how, right? And they said that there was this surgery, but it only has a 1% chance of working.
Right.
Most of the time it doesn't work. And they said that if they don't amputate, that I was going to live in pain. And, I was just going to struggle a lot with this leg. Right. And my mom told the doctor, well, if her arm didn't have that 1% of making it, let's give her leg that 1% chance of recovering.
Go, mom.
Yeah. So they did. They put, there's so much in medicine. I had no idea. They put bone cement. They filled it in. They took skin graft from my thigh, and they cover my leg. Mm-hmm. So now it's a good leg.
There you go.
Yeah, and they said they had to put the bone cement because they didn't want to risk. I was very prone to infections, so they didn't want to. And I was very delicate. I was getting infections a lot, and right. from my skin and in the cuts and all that. I was just very weak. So that's why they put the bone cement and not bone graft. So yeah, they cover that. So they amputated half of my big toe mm-hmm. on my left leg. Because that was already dying. So they just amputated half of it. And by the time I left to rehab in January, I went to rehab. I start rehab and do all that. The infection didn't go away. So they had to amputate the whole toe in San Diego.
Okay. Does that affect your balance now, or you've become accustomed to it?
It does affect my balance, but not as much. I mean, I can still walk, and I do limp a little bit, but not as bad. Mm-hmm. It used to be really bad where it would hurt. My leg would hurt a lot. But I just had another surgery in November where they removed the bone cement and they actually took bone graft from my right leg and they put it on my left leg. So I don't have bone cement anymore. It's just bone regenerating.
Wow. It's miraculous what they can do.
Yes.
My goodness. So after 5 months in rehab, did you finally get to go home?
Yes. So in rehab, during those 5 months, they taught me how to get dressed, how to shower, how to eat, how to kind of write with my left hand because I was right-handed dominant. They mm-hmm. were teaching me everything. They taught me how to walk again because, like I said, I was in a wheelchair. They taught me how to walk, but I was doing very good. And then the infection came back, and that's when they had to amputate my toe. And then I was ready to go home. I recovered from the amputation. I was ready to go home. But then my kidney, now I only have one kidney, but my one kidney was not doing very well. Mm-hmm. So my doctors in the rehab center didn't want to send me home with a bad kidney, saying you would just, you know, go to the ER all the time. You're not good to go. So yeah. I stayed in the rehab center because of my kidney, not because I was not progressing physically. Mm-hmm. And then in May, I came back to Yuma.
God bless you. what an ordeal. Mm-hmm. And since coming home in May of 24, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. And here we are in April of 25. How many more surgeries have you had in the past 11 months?
None. I'm done. In November, I had my last two.
Excellent. Excellent. Are you running again?
I'm trying.
I bet you want to run now, right?
Now I want to. Yes.
Funny how those things work out, isn't it?
Yes. It's more like a fast walk.
Yeah. What's your future medical prognosis? Are you expecting full recovery, I mean, to the extent that it can be?
Yes, I'm actually cleared by four of my doctors. I had four different doctors, and all four of them already cleared me to go back to work.
Hey, look at you.
Yes.
Do you want to go back to work?
I do. I do. I feel like I didn't want anything more in life than going back to work.
Yeah. I got to ask you, what do you know about the driver of that car that almost killed you that night?
I just know he is in his 60s, 70s. What we were told was that he was not under the influence. He was not under any drugs. He was not sick. The vehicle was fine. The reason why he did what he did, I was told that was because he was arguing with his girlfriend in the car and he was upset and he just decided to crash. That's what I was told. I'm not sure.
Do you know if he was criminally charged?
He's being charged, but nothing has happened. It's been almost 2 years and we're still going to court. He was charged with aggravated assault. Mm-hmm. I think that's it. Yeah.
So what has been the response of the U.S. Border Patrol? I mean, so far, everything I'm hearing sounded pretty good that they are supporting you, but how are they responding to you wanting to come back on the job?
I feel very supportive now, supported by them. I feel like they're all in it for it. They really want me to go back. I must say that I got frustrated with them a lot, but now I understand that it's new to them. There's mm-hmm. never been an agent back on duty with an amputated arm. So I understand it's all new. There's a lot of policies and things like that. Right. They don't know how to handle this maybe because it's never happened before. And I feel like they're going to be very careful because depending on how they handle my case, is how that's going to determine the future of the patrol, right?
Right.
In the beginning, I felt like they were not listening to me. They didn't care about my needs. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go back to work. I told them I just need help. I don't know anything about guns. I need to pass my calls. If I want to make it back, I have to pass my calls. I don't know. I don't know how to shoot one-handed. I don't know how to do things. I don't have any training or anything about guns. And the only thing that I need, not the only thing, but the mainly thing that I need to go back to work is pass my calls. So I asked for help and helped arrive. Help was offered to me, just not by my station.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It was offered by other stations, by other sectors, just not by my station. And that's when I decided to, we got a new chief now, and I asked if I could meet with him. I met with him. He had no idea that I was trying to even, that I was asking for help. I understand the chief trusts what the people under him tells him, but of course, people were not relaying the information to him. So he had no idea what was going on with me regarding the training and all that. And I met with him. I told him what I needed. I told him I want to go back to work. I just need help. I said, I'm not sure. I'm not even sure if I can go back, but at least let me try. And if you let me try, can you at least help me with what I need so I can give my best and show you guys that I can still do my job? I think I can do my job better than most of the agents with two hands.
No good offense, for you, girl.
No offense. But that's the truth. And now it's been almost 2 years since I've been living my life with one hand. And honestly, there's nothing I cannot do. I'll do it differently, different than you, but I'll still do it. So I think I am very confident and I know what I can do. I know I can make it back. I know.
God bless you, girl. You know, and one of the things that you told me during our phone call was, hey, I'm not looking for a handout. I want to earn this myself. She earned the Border Patrol uniform. She earned the respect that goes along with that and the badge. And you even told me that you lost everything in your life because of that uniform. So yes. I don't know what the heck is wrong with us that we would want to come back to something like that, you know, but we do.
Yes.
And your story, that's why the first time when you and I talked about this, you made a statement to me that I don't think my story is worthy of being on your show. I can't think of, I made a list of heroes. I'm not going to read through them. And I have to be careful here because the older I get, the more emotional I get. I'm just so freaking proud of you for what you've done, what it is you want to do. You've recognized what some of your shortcomings could be, but you're willing to learn a new way of doing things. And to hear that Border Patrol is now supporting you 100% is just so encouraging, man. It just, hats off to the new chief there.
Yes, I just met him probably 2 weeks ago, and I told him all the plans that I have for when I go back. Mm-hmm. And he was very supportive. And honestly, I just didn't think that anything was going to happen because he's very busy. He's new. He's a new chief. And I was already disappointed with my station mm-hmm. here in Yuma.
Yeah.
But then he called me, Chief Banks. He called me and he gave me great news, actually, where I now feel that someone is listening to me. Someone wants to help me. Someone wants to do something about it. And that's him.
Excellent. So encouraging to hear that. And if it's any encouragement whatsoever, in 1989, my partner and I, we got in a shootout in Miami, and he got hit twice. He was right-handed, 245 caliber slugs in his right arm. He kept his right arm, but it's pretty deformed. He was right-handed for everything. He came back, and this is where the help comes in. DEA made him proficient in firing one-handed with his left hand. He's now proficient at it. He learned how to write left-handed, doing everything. And he's still, you know, he's retired now. He lives down in Sarasota, and he plays golf several times a week. So I hope that's a little bit of motivation for you or encouragement there, because you've certainly encouraged the hell out of me. Mm-hmm. You were recognized with an award from the Border Patrol, the Purple Cross citation. Is that right?
Yes, yes. And that was given to me by the previous chief, Chief Owens. Yes, I've received the Purple Cross, which is, I believe, is the highest award you can get in the Border Patrol. It's not one someone wants to give or receive, but I take a lot of pride on that, because everything that happened to me, I don't blame anyone for it. I'm just an agent doing my job, and this happened, and I don't blame anyone. I took an oath, like I told you, I took an mm-hmm. oath to serve my country, and I did. I feel like, I don't know, nobody owes me anything. That's why I told you I'm going to earn it back.
I tell you what, Carla, I'll support you, and I'm sure about 100% of our listeners will be behind you all the ways. I don't know that we can do a whole lot more for you than offer our prayers and our support, but I want you to know that you do have that. And before we finish up here, if you had all this to do over again, would you do things differently?
No.
No?
I probably wouldn't have gotten married, but...
Well, I had a practice wife too, so sounds like you had a practice husband.
No, I would do everything the same. It's been very eye-opening. I was not like this before. I've learned a lot about myself, about others, and it just makes me want to do more for them, more for the people. I know that's why, you know, I said, I don't think my story is worth having in your podcast, Steve, but if it's gonna make someone, you know, believe in themselves, or if they're going through something, they're gonna see the light at the end of the tunnel. Believe me, you have to. Nothing. I don't think there's things worse, but I don't think anything can be worse enough for you, you know, to not come back up.
So, I mean, you talk about a never give up kind of attitude. Holy cow. That's the definition right there. You're looking at her, and look at the smile. She's still smiling after everything she's gone through since October of 23. That's why your story is more important than anything I've ever done, and more important than most guys. And the guy, again, when I say guys, that's all inclusive. So ladies, you're included in that as well. And then one last question for you. Do you have any words of advice or wisdom for anybody considering a law enforcement career, but especially in the U.S. Border Patrol? What would you say? What would your advice be to them? Go find another job?
No, honestly, it's a great job. I've always said it's a great job with a lot of opportunities. It has a lot of things for you to do. I mean, you can never, if you're bored of something, the Border Patrol has 100 more options for you to do. Yeah. If you're bored of your assignment, you can apply for another assignment. And there's many assignments. You can never get bored with this job, honestly. It's very rewarding. Saving people is very rewarding. I save a few people. And, you know, it's just knowing that you're serving, you're helping people, you're serving others in this capacity. It just makes me feel, it's a satisfaction that you get, you know?
Yeah.
And for someone that's looking into a career in law enforcement, this is a great job. It's a great career. If you don't want to go Border Patrol, go ahead. But is the rewards that we get are much more than anything material or anything like that. It's more in your mind, in your heart. It's very rewarding.
Yeah. Carla, I can't think of enough words to say thank you so much for coming on the show. You have represented the title of being a public service, which a public servant, which I believe is a badge of honor, not a derogatory term. The fact that you chose to serve your fellow man and woman, almost gave your life to do that, and you're willing to go back and do it again. Wow. It's, you know, I think God gives us gifts and gifts. And for you and me, I think it's gifts of service to others. So thank you so much for what you did, for what you went through. I'm so sorry you had to go through that, but the way you've come out has become so motivational, so inspirational to others. I'm expecting tons of unbelievable comments coming in about your story. If there's anything that I can ever do for you, all you got to do is just let me know. It's been an honor to have you here on the show. And for our listeners, I want you to check out Carla here on social media. She's on Instagram and on TikTok, both at Carla with a K, K-A-R-L-A, X Lozano, not Castellanos. Okay. So it's Carla X Lozano. Show her some love on there. Blow up her channels. Share her story with others. I don't know if there's anything that she's going to gain out of that other than helping others to see that you don't let your circumstances determine your future. Look at the photograph. I saw one video on your social media where you're thanking everybody and their brother for everything from teaching you how to eat with a spoon again, to walk, to everything that you've had to go through. Look at some of the videos of her in the gym working out when I'm feeling sorry because I'm old and I'm lazy, you know, and here's this young lady in there doing pull-ups with one arm. I love it. I love everything I see, Carla. You're an inspiration. No, I'm repeating myself over and over. I just wish I was a smarter person that I could express my feelings for everything that you've gone through and what you represent. You represent the best of us here in our country.
Thank you.
God bless you. God bless you for everything you do. Okay. So let me stop rambling here and let's bring this to a close. For all you listeners out there, again, if you're listening to this, go check her out on YouTube. Do me a favor. Click that subscriber button while you're over there. But check out what this young lady looks like. She's beautiful, still a beautiful young lady, got an unbelievable future ahead of her. I can see her taking a major leadership role within the U.S. government here just to motivate other people to do what we should all be doing, and that's help our fellow man. Thank you for continuing to come back every week. I apologize to you for the coughing. I'm still getting over this sinus infection thing here, but I do appreciate you guys coming back. But I know the truth why you keep coming back every week. It's because you enjoy playing the biggest, the baddest, the most dangerous game at all, just like we heard today. And what's that game? That's the game of crimes. God bless you all. Carla, thank you so much for being on the show. See y'all next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.